Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. It's my pleasure to share up more private practice stories and wisdom in this, our third season. My guests are generous, creative, and honest. It has been such a joy to be able to hold these conversations and capture these moments for your listening pleasure. We're sure that you'll really enjoy these unplugged chats and these private practice heart-to-hearts. So settle in, let's get the conversation started. Hello everybody, we've got a wonderful guest again today on the Private Practice Secrets podcast. I'd like to welcome to the crazy Nadine Presland, who's the Member Development Advisor with ESSA. And we're going to hear all about what that actually means. But first of all, congratulations, Nadine. I don't think I've ever met anyone more persistent with technology than your good self.
Oh, thank you, Kathy. I appreciate that.
This is about take three for us, but here we are. So tell us about, first up, what ESSA is, what it stands for, what it is.
Okay, so ESSA is the acronym for Exercise and Sports Science Australia, and we are both the registering body but also the membership organisation for degree-qualified exercise professionals. So we're a little bit complicated in that we look after four different professions. So, and we're also a self-regulating body. So unlike some of the other allied health professions which are part of ARPRA, so we're actually part of NASRAP. So we're with other professions such as speech pathology and audiology. So we're self-regulating. So we basically do everything here. We set the standards, we register people, and we support them in practice. And the four professions that we look after are accredited exercise scientists, accredited exercise physiologists, accredited sports scientists, and high performance managers. So they're all degree qualified in exercise science. So it's a little bit unusual. There's not really any other association that looks after that many professions. So we've got a big job to do. And all of those accrediting professions have slightly different specialities, which I'm assuming you're going to ask me lots of questions about what they do.
Absolutely. I had no idea until really recently that there were so many categories and niches, if you like. So if we could go through each one slowly and carefully, I'll be able to brush up on what I know. But for other allied health professionals listening, they might just be thinking a little bit about who they could be working with.
Sure thing. I will do my best to explain this very simply. So the easiest way to think about these four types of people is probably by their qualifications and the types of people that they look after. So I like to think of it as a bit of a pyramid. So if you picture a pyramid, you've got the bottom half is the base, the foundation. And so every one of those four professions has what we call an exercise science foundation. So they've studied at least 3 years and got a degree in exercise science. And after that, they are eligible to apply for accreditation as an exercise scientist. And some people listening may not have heard of them. It's a fairly new accreditation. It's only been around since 2016. But what those accredited professionals specialise in is exercise prescription for the purpose of improving health, wellness, and preventing chronic conditions. So they're not necessarily clinically trained, but they have learnt about an awareness and they've covered a lot of the foundations of exercise prescription from a very scientific point of view, and then covered a lot of other things that listeners might not have heard of, but they do actually cover a little bit of nutrition, and most importantly, they cover behaviour change. And I always like to point out that you can write an exercise program for someone or provide exercise science services, but if you can't get someone to do it or adhere to it, then you're not going to have any positive outcomes. So that's learnt in those foundational years, is how to deal with people, how to prescribe very specifically for individuals, and also having an awareness of those chronic conditions and perhaps being in that assistant role to someone more clinically trained. So all of our professionals are exercise scientists. Then from there, you can go and specialize a little bit more. So you can become an exercise physiologist. And that's probably what most allied health have heard of before. So AEPs, accredited exercise physiologists, have been recognized by Medicare since 2006. So they've actually been around a fair amount of time, and they've done a little bit extra study, so at least 4 years, and some of those have done an undergrad and then a master's, but at least 4 years full-time equivalent study, and concentrate on prescribing exercise to those with chronic conditions, disability, illness, injuries, etc. So it's pretty intense that final year where they cover quite a range of target pathologies. So I'd be here all day if I was listing all of them, but we look at metabolic, cardiorespiratory, musculoskeletal, neurological, cancer, renal failure, et cetera, et cetera. And they learn about all of the signs and symptoms of those pathologies, the effects of medications, but most importantly, they learn about what other allied health treatments are about and how they can complement them. So that's our probably most known profession is our exercise physiologists, and they are working in quite a range of settings, so private practice, hospitals. Some end up being policy advisors or work as project officers for primary health networks, etc. Then for those that don't want to go that clinical route, they can go the athlete route. And that's very easy to explain. These people have developed quite a lot of experience in a high performance or a professional sport environment, and they have gone on to meet quite a lot of industry standards, and then they can become an accredited sports scientist. And then with further experience and in some cases further training, they can become what we call a high performance manager. So that's typically someone working at the highest level of a professional club, overseeing all of the performance services. So I think that's pretty much it in a nutshell. There was no short way to explain that, but
yeah, that's really, really useful. I'm super guilty of having put everyone in the same box. And just kind of made generic statements, not realizing that there were so much diversity in the profession.
And sometimes that can be complicated and a little bit difficult when explaining the profession, but probably what I'd encourage others to do is ask people, well, what type of clients do you specialize in? Because the foundational scope of practice is very broad. And I use the word foundational because it's not really where people end up. So they end up looking after a specific population. So, for example, we have members that really like looking after people that are undergoing cancer treatment. So that's where they focus. And you can try and, if you wanted to find an accredited exercise physiologist that was specialist or expert in that area, you could actually go onto the ESSA website and search for an AEP with that specific focus. And then, of course, there's other exercise physiologists that focus on a number of areas or focus on, Department of Veteran Affairs clients, for example. So they end up specialising, but when they graduate, they are quite broad.
Yeah. It kind of is in line with speech pathology and OT and physio and psych. We come up with a broad degree and then we decide to kind of niche or hone in an area or move within a couple of fields across our careers. So, yeah. Give me an idea, and listeners as well, about how many members you've got and how many practicing exercise scientists, exercise physiologists there are.
Good question. So ESSA has over 7,000 members in various categories at this point in time, but we have just over 4,000 accredited exercise physiologists. So it has grown a lot in the last few years, and it is becoming a popular career choice and also a career choice for those people that have perhaps undertaken another allied health or health science degree but want that extra to be able to offer exercise science or exercise physiology services. So it has grown a lot, and we are featuring in a range of compensation schemes. So, yes, of course, we're recognised under Medicare, under the Chronic Disease Management Plan and Type 2 Diabetes Group services. We're also recognised under the NDIS in some parts that are rolling it out at the moment, obviously DVA, and pretty much every private health fund. So we have gained a lot of momentum, and we continue to have to educate not only the public but also the other allied health professions what we do and how we can complement those other professional services and how they can contribute to someone's overall health and well-being.
Could we take a little bit of a tour of the NDIA, NDIS? What sort of work are your exercise physiology members providing in that kind of space?
I'd have to say at the moment it's not exactly where we want it to be, and we're doing a lot of advocacy work in that area because we're recognised under the health and wellbeing category at the moment. So we're trying to expand that a little bit more. There are a number of exercise physiologists involved with clients through the NDIS, but also there's a lot of exercise physiologists providing private services in the disability sector as well, and have been doing that for quite some time and specialising in increasing function and helping people gain more independence through using exercise as a treatment. So at the moment, I would have to say we are trying to gain momentum within the NDIS and work with the NDIA to become a little bit more recognised at this point. And that's where our profession is, a little bit, we have to work very, very hard. We're the newest health profession and we are advocating as much as we can.
Emerging. I have a pretty heavy hunch that there's a lot of associations wanting more bandwidth with the NDIA and services and prices and all the rest of it. It's a very sensitive topic at the moment, as you guys are well aware. Okay, so is there a bit of a trend that you're noticing about private practice with exercise physiologists?
I guess for the listeners, I'm speaking to those people from the point of view of employing an exercise physiologist because, so for example, a clinic owner may see some potential opportunities in offering further services and adding exercise physiology services to their repertoire. They also might want to think about employing an exercise scientist to assist with some of those other allied health professional treatments or services that are happening. So exercise scientists also work as pseudo allied health assistants, if you like. So they are actually able to follow and deliver interventions on behalf of other professionals that have written those and be supervised in that as well. But what I'm noticing out there in private practice is expanding services to include exercise physiology because we need to help people in a number of ways. And I guess offering exercise services is low risk. It's not invasive. And it's an additional option. And there are so many benefits, as everyone will know, with doing exercise and even doing group exercise. So we like to look at health outcomes as a multidisciplinary approach, and I think clinics are starting to realise that slowly and thinking about employing people to offer those services as part of their clinic.
Oh, I agree. I can imagine. I can see them as a really valuable team member within the allied health private practice, kind of under the roof. To what extent do they work with children and families? How does that look from your members' point of view?
Okay, so beforehand I mentioned this foundation. So typically in that first 3 years, there's quite a lot of focus on growth and development and ageing and working through the stages of growth and development and what needs to be considered and working with infants and children and youth, adults and the aged. So that's just further emphasised in that clinical part. Again, the foundational scope is broad But then some people end up specialising in children and youth or specific population. So I would say if you're running a practice and you're offering youth or services for children and you wanted to look at getting someone that was specialist in that area, there would be some people that would take that area. But generally a fairly new graduate is going to be fairly broad, and it, and if you're wanting to really be specific in that population, you would search for an AEP who had had a lot of experience there. And you can do that by using our search. So we have a really good search function, which the public and anyone can use. It's on our website on the front page. You can just literally search per, 50K radius, for example, with a person with different specialities. So they're really easy to find. And just backtracking on your previous question about what I'm starting to notice from private practice is they are asking, how much do I pay these people? And it is a very, very good question. It should be in line with what you pay your other allied health professionals, because the award is similar. So you use the same award. So for an accredited exercise physiologist, you can use two awards as benchmarks. So the Health Professional Services Award, and then the state award for health professionals for your state. And then exercise scientists also fall as part of that Health Professional Services Award as well. But we're seeing, just as you would expect, quite a range of employment structures. So a percentage, a rental, we're seeing casual, we're seeing permanent employees, we're seeing contract, everything. So there's not really any one common way to employ, but people are employing and people are asking. I would say weekly I would get inquiries about how do I employ an exercise physiologist and what do I pay them. So hopefully that answers that question.
That's great. How about you give a shout out to the website right now? We'll certainly have it in the show notes, but if people are listening, they might want to kind of keep listening and tap away as well.
Sure. So go to www.essa.org.au, and on the front homepage, there's a big box in the middle that says Find an Accredited Member. So, for example, if you are a practice offering services to children and you're wanting to add to your services and perhaps talk to an exercise physiologist that specialises with children and disability, for example, go searching for that. You'll be able to click the options and a range of people should come up. Now, those people have put themselves on their website, so it's obviously up to them to update, and we try and remind them as much as possible, but it will come up with their name and contact details and hopefully their website, so you can have a chat with them.
If a OT's beach psych physio business owner decided to engage exercise scientist, exercise physiologist, what sort of professional development investment activities would they need to be providing?
Sure, good question. So as part of their accreditation, there's a number of standard requirements, and these are also part of our NASRAP accreditation, NASRAP standing for National Alliance of Self-Regulating Health Professions. So all our accredited people at this point in time working with people need to have first aid and CPR, need to accrue 20 continuing professional development points every year, and obviously follow the code of conduct. So their professional development is always compulsory CPD when they join. That's on standards and compliance, so that's their processes through compensation schemes. And then the rest of the points need to be made up with their areas of interest. So we as a membership organisation provide our own professional development, but we also obviously allow our members to attend external professional development, and they do, and we encourage that as well. So, you know, we do a range of professional development in quite a wide range of areas. I've got a few examples here. So, for example, pelvic floor in men, considerations for prostate surgery, exercise during pregnancy, exercise physiology before and after joint replacement surgery, lumbar spine rehab, the list goes on. So that's our accredited professional development, which we also would invite other people to join as well. So if you would like to understand more about exercise and using that as a treatment or management for a particular condition or disability, you're most welcome to join our professional development as well. And that's on our website under the professional development page.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. What about insurance? How does that work? It's tricky enough understanding all the insurance ins and outs for ourselves as such. How does it work for exercise professionals?
So our accredited exercise professionals need to have professional indemnity insurance. That's a they must have that. And then obviously if they own a business, we encourage them to talk to the insurer about public liability and all the other insurances that you might need. But we also partner with Guild. So we have very special policies for all our accredited members. It's very easy for them. They literally tick a box and fill in a couple of minor details, and that policy is there especially for them. They don't need to go with Guild, but it makes it nice and easy, and that means that Guild really understands our people. So, yes, every accredited person has their own professional indemnity insurance.
That makes it so easy because, you know, a lot of, some other allied health professionals also use Guild. So it's a bit of a one phone call and you can tick a few boxes. So given that exercise professionals is an emerging culture and emerging service, what do you think it's going to look like in the next, 3 or 4 years for your organisation and your members?
Well, I can say what I'd hope it to look like.
Yeah, good for that.
So we are really, as I said, about multidisciplinary rehabilitation, if you like, from the clinical health point of view. And the healthcare homes model, I think, is a very good example of ideal healthcare. So it's approaching everyone holistically and working together as allied health. I don't think allied health should ever feel like they're in competition with each other, because at the end of the day, we're all trying to help people. And if we can do that together and produce better outcomes and therefore less burden on the health system, then I think that's what we're all trying to achieve. I think we all get into the health profession to help people. Let's do it together. And, let's help people become more self-managing. I think that's a big part of what we're trying to do here. Hopefully a lot of people adopt exercise as a regular part of their everyday life, and that's what we're going to encourage to do. That's part of our mission here at ESSA, is to encourage everyone to enhance their health, well-being and performance through exercise. So that's what I'd hope it to look like. I think ESSA will be successful in their advocacy efforts. We never give up. We've got some fantastic ambassadors here at ESSA who are constantly working with government and lobbying as much as possible to get our profession recognised. And we're evidence-based. It's just a no-brainer that exercise will help and does help a range of chronic conditions and injuries, disability. So we've just got to keep going. So I think in the long term we will have success, we will be more recognised, and I would hope that we're holistically working together as health professions to increase health outcomes for everyday Australians.
Oh, cheers to that. We all want exactly what you said, better health outcomes, and I hope this isn't a moment of sacred turf. There can be a little bit of that sometimes in allied health, probably in other commercial sectors as well. But there is plenty of work to be had and plenty of opportunity out there as well. I want to go back to something a little bit earlier. You gave the scenario of an exercise professional potentially having a role of an allied health assistant, something like that. So that's one way that they could be engaged in an allied health business. What would it look like if they were engaged as themselves and that they provided exercise support and intervention to kids and teens and people with different abilities? What do they bring in to a pretty typical kind of private practice?
Okay, so for example, an exercise scientist might decide to develop group exercise sessions for young girls aged 12 to 16. And because strength is a little bit of a focus, especially, for example, some young girls playing sport are susceptible to knee injuries. So we want to encourage more strengthening, but in the right way. So, for example, someone might come in and offer a once, twice a week group service for that purpose. And that's quite a generic example. Other people might offer one-on-one services in preparation for something that they're trying to achieve. So it might be a client has undergone surgery and they've been through quite a lot of clinical intervention, but now they're at a point where they can maintain. So then they no longer really have a clinical need, but through the process of becoming better, they've now decided, actually, I would like to maintain this regular exercise routine and I want to do a 5K walk. So there might be group exercise services related to that, or there might be just general strength sessions. A common one, though, is falls prevention. So you're not necessarily working with someone to help treat or manage their condition, but we're doing it to help strengthen, so they're preventing any further injury. So falls prevention is quite a common one, especially in aged care settings. And exercise scientists are skilled and knowledgeable and have experience in dealing with people for prevention of conditions. So that's probably a nice example. So yes, one-on-one groups and for maintenance, because a lot of the time, once that clinical need is gone, that person's off. But to keep them well, what can we do as a practice or as a profession to keep them well and keep them going? And you could provide some what we'd call maintenance services.
Yeah.
And doing group services. So we all know as allied health professionals, most people don't just have one thing wrong. There can be multiple things wrong and you're dealing with multiple things at one time. So sometimes even providing an opportunity for someone to attend a group where they've got people of their own age or just purely for social reasons, but they're also getting strengthening at the same time, also provides an added benefit. So I think maintenance services is your answer, and I would hope that in the future people would invest in that. But as a profession, we need to encourage people that is worth their time.
Got it. That illustrates it really nicely. Thank you for that. What are some examples of exercise physiologists working with, say, children with autism or teens with autism, that different sort of neuro disability space?
I would have to say that in answer to your future question, we might see exercise physiologists working more in that space. At the moment, it's not part of our professional standards, but it is also something where people have gone off and undertaken their own professional development and started to work with children, for example, with autism. There are a few APs, not many. It's sort of a more of an emerging area, and I think in the future with our review, so we review our professional standards every 5 years. So the last review, we saw mental health more detail added to our standards, and we also saw renal failure added. And I think the next round of review, you'll see autism and other spectrum disorders added to our standards. So I think that we're pretty new in that space, but I still think you'll probably be able to find maybe a handful of professionals that are dealing with that at the moment. But a long way to go, I think, but coming. Watch the space.
That makes sense. From time to time when I'm talking with business owners, they're thinking about engaging someone, or they may have someone, or there's someone in the area and it's part of a combined care kind of relationship around a client. So, it'll be interesting to see if that emerges and if there's some professional development and support that goes into it. I could imagine that could be a little bit of a growth corridor for some of your guys.
Absolutely. And I just encourage everyone to start having conversations. So if someone listening is thinking, oh, look, I'd really like to work with someone who is perhaps working with children with spectrum disorders, let's get a conversation going. And if you can't find them using our search, ring ESSA. And we'll do a shout out to our membership and we'll, let's find people. So that's not a problem for us. We do that quite regularly. We have a very engaging membership. They love to help each other. And I think any conversation with any other allied health profession, I'd like to speak on behalf of my members and say that they would be keen on that.
Yeah, good, good, good. You're very supportive of your members. You're also providing a lot of information to everybody else to build awareness out there about what exercise professionals provide. Tell us a little bit about Exercise Right and that website and what's on that good place.
Yeah, thank you. Exercise Right is a very successful awareness campaign. So we started that a few years ago for the purpose of informing the public about what our professions do with real life case studies. But it's just a very good resource centre for any other allied health professional, anyone that's got an interest, anyone that's trying to find out any information at all about how exercise might help a condition. So perhaps you've got a condition or illness yourself and you're just wanting to see what other people are doing, you can go on that website and download any fact sheets. You can read blogs. There are videos, real-life case studies of exercise professionals working with real clients, and you can hear about their journey. So we've actually developed our own Exercise Right Week. So that's always in May every year. So we've obviously just had that. And we support our members to help them educate their clients by providing them lots of resources and digital health toolkits and things like that to help engage their members. So it's an online resource for the public, for consumers, but it really is a great tool for everyone. And look, I like to use it. I mean, I've even pointed my own family members to it because they don't understand what an exercise professional or what exercise can do for them. So if they're not prepared to have a conversation and they like to do their own research, point them there. And I would encourage anyone else to link to that Exercise Right website, and you can borrow some of the information on there. We're happy to share.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I guess one of the big points of our conversation today on the podcast is that we need, I'll use the word traditional, allied health professionals, OT, physio, speech, psych, dietitians, whoever else, to actually start some conversation with exercise professionals and vice versa for exercise professionals to perhaps not hesitate and pick up the phone or knock on the door of, the guys that are already in business with clients and teams and all the rest of it, because there could be some really, I'm sure that there will be some really amazing synergies out there, and all with that focus of supporting people who are well to be even better and more independent, but to also support people who are engaged with, you know, NDIS and therapy supports and really looking at kind of being their best selves. Would you agree with that one?
Absolutely. We might need to organise something between us, Kathy, some sort of an annual event or more regular than that. I'd like to see allied health talking more. And we need to find a way to make that happen. And it can happen. We can, go to each other's professional development. We all have face-to-face and online events. So let's just get talking. And I'm happy to hear from anyone and put anyone in touch. I feel in my role, I connect people a lot, and I'm happy to do that. So let's just start.
Well, maybe between us we could hustle up an Australian Allied Health Day or something. Yeah, there could be something in there, or it could be part of your week in May. So let me know if you come up with a cool idea. I'm happy to float it past the guys that are on that I'm engaged with.
Excellent. I think after this call, the ideas will be flowing. I like it.
All righty. Well, let's not kind of get too distracted by the what ifs. I would just love to thank you out loud for persisting with all our technology challenges and helping all the listeners understand to even a deeper level all that is the exercise profession. So thanks, Nardine.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. If you're running a private practice and keen for more business confidence and management know-how, head on over to our website, nacre.com.au. I'll spell it, nacre.com.au. Over there, you'll find all sorts of business resources and inspiration, blogs, forms, web events, freebies, our virtual conference information, workshops, and more. And don't be shy. Take advantage of the free power call and book yourself into my diary for the chance to have a business chat and to pick my brains. I'm Cathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, wishing you and your business a brilliant day.